Thank you, Wayne. Yeah, the exposure draft of annual improvements that we're dealing with at the moment also proposed an amendment to IS 12, and as part of this proposed amendment, it proposed to clarify that an entity assesses whether to recognize the tax effect of a deductible temporary difference as a deferred tax asset in combination with other deferred tax assets, so a combined assessment, not a separate assessment. If tax law restricts, however, the utilization of tax losses so that the entity can only deduct the tax loss against income of a specific type, the entity must still assess a deferred tax asset in combination with other deferred tax assets, but only with deferred tax assets of the appropriate type. This was the first proposed clarification. The second one was that taxable profit against which an entity assesses a deferred tax asset for recognition is the amount before any reversal of deductible temporary differences. And the third proposal was to clarify that an action that results only in the reversal of existing deductible temporary differences is not a tax planning opportunity. To qualify as a tax planning opportunity, the action needs to create or increase taxable profit. The ISB proposed this clarification in order to resolve significant diversity in practice on whether to recognize a deferred tax asset when the entity has first deductible temporary differences relating to unrealized losses on debt instruments that are classified as available for sale financial assets. Second, has the ability and intention to hold these instruments until the loss reverses. And third, has insufficient taxable temporary differences and no other probable taxable profits against which the entity can utilize those deductible temporary differences. On the basis of our comment letter analysis, we propose that the issue of whether and when deferred tax assets for unrealized losses on debt instruments are recognized should be addressed in a separate project to amend IS 12, in which the Interpretations Committee does the work on behalf of the ISB. We think that the issue cannot be clarified as part of any improvements because it requires answering the question whether an entity can assume to recover an asset for more than its carrying amount when estimating probable future taxable profits, and such guidance cannot be finalized without exposing a draft amendment to IS 12. This exposure draft recommend should also proposed to clarify further the issues listed in paragraph 134 of the agenda paper. Accordingly, we want to ask the following questions to the Interpretations Committee. Does the Interpretations Committee agree to recommend to the ISB that it should proceed with the issue in a separate project to amend IS 12?
Ron?
It was a long paper to read, but I think that I agree where you go to, except for the last point. So I agree that you determine taxable profit before the reversal of the deductible temporary differences. I agree that in determining taxable profit, you can consider recovering more than the carrying amount of the assets. Where I disagree is that you consider that you need to have a narrow scope project for that, because particularly for the latter one, for me it was obvious. So I didn't see the need. I did not understand why do you need to go for narrow scope project. Maybe my colleagues will explain it to me, but for me, where you were going was the right direction, even if a little bit complicated to get there. And I think what it would help is to have the illustrations, as you mentioned, I think somewhere in your paper, to provide illustration how to do with available for sale with unrealized losses. And I think you have another example. I think this would be helpful.
Scott? I agree with Laurence. I was following along real well, said yep. Then you said we need a project. I thought, really? I thought these were the answers as applies to the issue we have here. You know, we've used examples where the available for sale security is the only thing in the entity. And if that were the case, then, you know, I think you could look ahead and say, I'm going to have taxable profit because I'm going to have interest income from the security and I'm going to have recovery of the basis. And therefore, I will be able to utilize this deferred tax asset, so you could recognize it. Where you would not be able to recognize the deferred tax asset is, as you describe, when the available for sale security is in an entity that, looking ahead, has operations that are going to generate tax losses. And so then, even though you could say, I will have some income taxable profit from this available for sale security, it's not enough to overcome those tax losses. Therefore, you can't recognize the deferred tax asset. I thought you had it all right and that it was just fine to finalize the annual improvement with those changes and move on.
It did occur to me that in the example of a debt instrument, we're not even assuming that you'll recover more than the carrying amount because the carrying amount is a present value. And if all we're assuming is that you will realize the cash flows that are inherent in the measurement itself, you're not really anticipating future taxable income. You're just saying I'm doing this consistent with a measurement attribute.
I think you are assuming future taxable income, but I agree with you. You're not assuming future taxable income by making any kind of estimates that you didn't already make in measuring the instrument in the first place.
I guess that's
it's easy.
Okay, we have two people who'd like to just finish this as annual improvements and go home. Andrew?
I'm not sure about that, but, I mean, if we go down that route, I mean, are we going to see this again? Because there's lots of comments on lots of paragraphs in this draft annual improvement. And, you know, I think we'd have to go through, based on the comment letters, we'd have to go through it. Even if we want to do it by annual improvement, I don't think it's a question of, right, that's fine, we're done. I mean, there's lots of, the comment letters raise lots of issues on these things and greater clarity around stuff. So, I mean, I think we'd have to see, you know, if we're going to do it because the carrying amount is the present value, so it's not a future carrying amount, it's just inherent in the existing carrying amount, then maybe that's fine, but there was lots of other comments in here about lack of clarity in the example and some of the wordings. So what I'm saying is I wouldn't, if I agreed with Scott, and I might do, I wouldn't just sign this off and say, fine, we're done.
No, and I wasn't proposing that either. Bernd, were you trying to get in? Well, I'm hearing
Guido,
excuse me.
So I'm supportive of the proposal by the staff because, I mean, we are talking about annual improvement here, and it took the staff 140 paragraphs to talk about the issues that were raised by some of, I'm not an IS-12 expert, but I know that the guys in my firm thought about it and they had some concerns and you came up with some conclusions which might be the right ones. But looking at all the concerns that were raised by constituents about this issue, I do not think that this is something that should be dealt with in any improvement project. Because it seems to be that there are so many things around this specific issue in IS-12 where people have different views on how to apply IS-12, and then we say, well, interesting that you guys out there have different views, but the standard is clear and it's a very narrow issue and we can deal with it in any improvement project. I'm not sure that this is the right answer. So I think it's way too complicated and there are too many different views out there to deal with it in an annual improvement project. So that's why I would agree with the staff recommendation to look at it maybe in a narrow project to change or clarify the standard.
John and then Andrew.
I mean, I share the views that Andrew and Guido have said. I I think the issues raised, there's a whole raft of issues raised in quite a significant number of comment letters that go to issues of understanding of IAS 12, and it's quite clear from the comment letters that there isn't a clear single understanding of IAS 12, right from the very objective of IAS 12 right through to the individual requirements. So while I might get to this answer of what's being proposed in these requirements, I think not everybody else is logically going to get there by considering this just a clarification of IAS 12. So I think it is a limited scope project to do it, and probably requires amendments to more paragraphs than just the ones proposed in this annual improvement.
Oh, you had me until that last bit. Andrew, did you get in?
Not really. I mean, I think from what I hear the staff, so where you're heading is in the AFS security example, you've got unrealized losses, and you've got strategy to hold to maturity, and so you will be able to book a deferred tax asset in that scenario, which is an answer I agree with, but I think on balance, I'm where Guido is. There's just so many comments here. You go through so many avenues to get to that answer. I do think it's a bit of a brave step just to say, fine, we'll do it by annual improvements.
Yeah, I think one of my reservations is that any time you open 12, we all know that the 12 specialists are absolutely detail driven, and I'm surprised they didn't generate more concerns, having worked on the previous attempts to amend 12. And one of the questions that occurs to me is, and I would ask the board members to weigh in on this too, maybe we shouldn't do this at all. Maybe, and I remember at least a couple of the comment letters saying that, as people often do with 12, this goes to fundamental issues in 12, and you can't deal with one without dealing with at least 18 others. And that's a bigger bite than any of us expected. So is an alternative to just say, you know, this is just too hard, and we shouldn't do it at all? You know,
that would probably leave us with the board taking up IAS 12 in general, which will be, I don't know, how long down the road, never. Which I don't think is a good way to deal with it. I agree that it will take more work to look at IAS 12, but I'm optimistic that at the end of the day, the board can do something to IAS 12 that helps the practice to apply IAS 12 better than it has been done before. What worries me about this answer that we are giving, and I had the same understanding as Andrew, that now we are saying, yes, if you held it up to maturity, you can recognize a deferred tax asset. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we came up with a different answer at the beginning, that we said, no, holding this, I understand now that you say it's not a tax planning opportunity, but we come to the same conclusion based on different views. But didn't we say at the beginning that you could not recognize a deferred tax asset?
My experience from discussions during the comment period on this idea was that in the end people had different understandings what the conclusion of the committee was when it last discussed the issue in November 2010. Some thought, yeah, we said you can recognize them unless you're in a loss position. Or others said, you know, I think we concluded you cannot recognize them. So there was, what I experienced was there was uncertainty on that, different views.
Scott?
I thought I knew what we had decided, which was, you know, the issue comes because there were some who were making the argument that the assessment of a deferred tax asset on an available for sale security can be done standalone, that you don't have to think about taxable income of the entity as a whole. And we said, no, that's not right. You have to do it in conjunction with everything else. And then all the other answers kind of flow from that. That means that you do your all-in assessment of, are you going to have taxable income? And if so, then you can recognize the deferred tax asset. If not, you can't. So I did think that I knew what we decided and that it was been consistently conveyed throughout. I would not want to do nothing. It seems like this is a big practice issue, and we think we know the answer. Then we can, if it can't be done in annual improvements, that's fine. We can do it in an amendment of IAS 12. I take the point that IAS 12 is dangerous. And just to add another measure of the danger, the FASB recently reversed itself on this issue as part of its financial instruments project, and for reasons that baffle me, concluded that, quote, the board decided that an entity should evaluate the need for evaluation allowance on deferred tax assets related to debt instruments classified and measured at fair value through OCI separately from its evaluation of other deferred tax assets. I have absolutely no idea what happened. But I take the point that playing around with income taxes is apparently dangerous, because we can get ourselves twisted up. But for now, if we're all comfortable as to what the answer on this should be, and it sounds like we are, then I hope we address it.
John?
I support trying to do something on this. I don't think sort of closing the book and walking away is really a good solution. I don't see this being taken on as a large scale project by the board anytime soon, and there are major practice issues in the interpretation of these paragraphs and others. I suppose all I'm saying is I think the issue, it needs to be broadened slightly from what we're currently dealing with in the annual improvements. Where we draw the line is, which issues we open up and which ones we don't is really a difficult thing. But I think we just need to be look at it a little broader than just this particular issue.
You can't get away with that one. What do you have in mind?
I just think there are issues raised in the comment letters which actually go to with the I actually think there's issues with the meaning of IAS 12 and what it's actually, because I think the objective of IAS 12, I think, conflicts with some of the conclusions, because I think the objective of IAS 12 says you account for the tax consequences of recovering the carrying value of your assets and liabilities. Some people take the view that means I actually look to the recovery of the carrying value of my assets and liabilities and therefore can't have regard to recovering more than the carrying value of my assets and liabilities. Now, that would take you in a completely different direction in interpreting some of these requirements. So I think clarity on what that actually means would be helpful.
Sean?
I also think we should clarify and keep going. But to answer your concern, opening IAS 12 is quite a challenge, I believe. And I was wondering, maybe it's a question for the staff. It wasn't clear with so many twists in the documentation, whether we need to amend IAS 12 or whether we could come up with an interpretation on the specific question that was asked to us. It would be maybe a way to provide the answer without opening IAS 12 and running the risk of having to address a number of issues. But I don't know if an interpretation the way we all agree on would conflict with IAS 12. It wasn't clear to me. It's a question for you.
Laurence, and then I have a question for Thomas.
Like Guido, I'm optimistic about doing some fixes sometimes to IAS 12, which we can do at our level. I know we'll have to discuss corporate wrappers at some stage and so on. So I'm not of the view that we should not touch IAS 12 at all. I think we can improve the understanding of IS-12 in certain areas. And this one seems to be one where we could provide additional guidance that is useful for enhancing consistent application of the standard, which is our goal, enhance consistent application of the standard. That being said, on the fact that we say, oh, you can recognize deferred tax assets every time you have AFS securities with unrealized losses, no, it's not a blank statement. It's in consideration of all deductible, all temporary differences and the ability of the entity to generate taxable profits and so on. So it's not the systematic, it's not a systematic and mechanical answer. So I want to be sure that my understanding of where you get to, it's not just a systematic answer. And so this is why I do believe that providing some cases, some illustrations would be helpful, and to show which cases you could have where deferred tax assets are recognized and which cases, in which cases you wouldn't have deferred taxes because the background has changed.
Thomas, I'm going to put two questions to you and then go to Guido. When I read the concerns raised, I didn't see any of them that struck me as a significant scope expansion from what we started out with. And I didn't read any of them that I thought I needed another 6 pages of analysis to understand. Having said that, we don't have time to go through all of these today. So are we really just limiting today's discussion to how do we proceed the next time we talk about this? That's a very complicated question. First part, do you think any of the concerns raised significantly expand the scope of what we set out to do?
No.
Okay. Do you agree we don't have time? And Andrew is absolutely right. Those concerns deserve to be addressed individually. We don't have time to do that today. Ergo, we're going to have to bring it back. So the real question is, do we approach this still on its own, or do we ask the board's permission to have, or do we ask the board effectively to subcontract a project to us? Isn't that the fundamental question?
This is the fundamental question. The only thing I would like to know then is, are we going already with a proposal to the board, or would we ask first for subcontracting and then develop a proposal? Because we have done that different ways in the past.
I don't think we should do it on speculation. We ought to ask them. Guido? And Laurence?
To me, the more general question here is, and it's not about the AFS debt securities or so, it's really, and most of the paper is dancing around this issue, how do you calculate taxable profit in order to be sure that there is a deferred tax asset? Is it sufficient to have zero taxable profit, or do you need to have positive taxable profit? I don't still know the answer to that. And that is really related to the issue, and now I'm expanding a little bit the thing that we are talking about. I think it's related to the issue, is that there are different views out there in deciding the question whether, if you have taxable temporary differences, even though you are in a loss situation in your tax financial statements, but if you have taxable temporary differences, is that sufficient to recognize deferred tax assets, even though you are in a loss situation? So would you only recognize deferred tax assets when you have taxable income? Or is it sufficient even in a loss situation, when you have a loss in your tax financial statements, that you have taxable temporary differences, which are deferred tax liabilities? So I think that the real issue here is, what are you looking at in order to decide whether you have, whether you can recognize deferred tax assets? And that's, I think, this is one aspect of it. which makes it clear, but I think that is an issue. Maybe people are saying, well, IS-12 is clear about that, but I know that there are different interpretations out there, and if we can help them in making the decision, what are the prerequisites to recognize a deferred tax asset? I think that would be helpful.
Luca, and then Laurence.
I share the point of Guido. I said just wanted to add something that I think that the analysis should be performed also considering the cases in which you have a carry back, a carry forward possibility according to the tax law, because I think that's this changed dramatically the way in which you look at your future taxable income that is appropriate to verify if you have to do an impairment of your tax assets. The other element is that, and I look at this from the preparer's point of view, is that the board clearly didn't include any elements regarding the timing that you have to consider in the future, or that you could consider in the future in order to verify your possibility to recover your tax assets. And this practical, from a practical point of view, not necessarily easy. You generally have a 4 years plan, and then you have some indication regarding the future after these 4 years end, but not necessarily enough information regarding your future taxable elements. So there are different approaches that are taken by the preparers in order to verify their possibility to recover their deferred tax assets. In this sense, I think that's a more comprehensive analysis of all the issues related could be useful in order to clarify the way in which EIS 12 requires you to verify the recognition of, and the probability of recovery of your taxable assets.
Okay. I'm going to start sounding like Cassandra, but I hear scope creep. Laurence, and then Scott.
I had a question about the process that is followed for finalizing annual improvement. So when the staff, you come to us for the finalization of the annual improvement, do you go up until the stage where you draft the final annual improvement, then you send it back to us so that we review, and it goes to the board once we have given our sign off on these revised drafting? That's my first question. And then I have a comment on Guido's point about offsetting taxable temporary differences versus deductible temporary differences.
As far as the process is concerned, what we aim to do is to capture all of your comments and views in from the discussions, and to be able to put that into a paper that we then take to the board. Now, if that requires us to circulate some revised wording on the amendment to you in order to accurately do that, then of course we would do that. Many times we are able to pick it up through the discussion and we don't need to circulate it back to you. So it depends on the degree and extent of comments we receive from you.
But here I would like to see the drafting before it goes to the board, obviously. Now, getting back to Guido's points about additional comments that have been raised in the comment letters for the scope and so on, I haven't seen the paper and the summary, that list of the questions about what if, so. So I would be interested in that one. With respect to taxable temporary differences versus deductible temporary differences, I read paragraph 28 as saying it is probable that taxable profit will be available against which deductible temporary differences can be utilized when there are sufficient taxable temporary differences related to the same tax authority and the same taxable entity, which are expected to reverse in the same period, etc., etc. So in my view, it has always been clear under IS 12 that you have taxable temporary differences versus deductible temporary differences, then you offset if they fall in the same period, same tax authority, and so on.
Let's just go straight line by line. Fei Long?
First, I didn't spend too much time to go through the paper, but I agree with Wayne's suggestion to making the decision at next meeting after getting more information on the if the scope is sufficiently narrow. And besides the whether the scope is sufficiently narrow, in my opinion, whether we are going to do something, will depend on that we have sufficient resources to touch it, because we may have more problem issue need to be solved. And in other words, if we have sufficient resources in terms of time or other resources, I think we can do something.
I think that's a fair comment. That's exactly why I addressed the question to Thomas about whether or not the concerns raised needed, in his mind, any significant additional discussion, exploration, any of that. As long as we got Thomas, we have sufficient staff resource.
And when do we lose him?
Next summer.
Okay.
John?
I suppose just to reiterate the issue, or one of the issues that I think also would need to be included. I mean, if you look at paragraph 51 of IAS 12, it says the measurement of deferred tax liabilities and deferred tax assets should reflect the tax consequences that would follow from the manner in which an entity expects at the end of the reporting period to recover or settle the carrying amount of its assets and liabilities. Some people interpret that to mean at their carrying amount. Other people interpret it that it's only the recovery of the carrying amount, but it can be at some other value. If you take an example of land, carried at $2 million. It's got a tax base of $5 million. Its fair value is $7 million. Do you look to the difference between the fair value and the carrying value to assess whether you're going to recover the deferred tax asset on the deductible temporary difference? That's really one of the fundamental questions. I suppose and some people read paragraphs in IAS 12, including the objective and paragraph 51 and paragraph 16, as saying, no, you can only have regard to the recovery of the carrying amount of the assets. Other people would say, read other paragraphs that say, no, you assess future taxable profits in a much more broad-scale basis, including the assets that give rise to the deferred tax asset themselves. That's the core fundamental disconnect or dichotomy that's in IAS 12 that sort of is at the heart of some of these different views about how it's applied.
Scott?
Clearly, we can make this hard if we want to. But the question that was asked to us is actually somewhat narrow in scope, and I haven't heard anything that says we need to broaden the scope. But I do see a lot from the comments that indicate that answering the question that was asked requires some explanation of how various parts of IAS 12 work. But BC1 of the proposed annual improvement describes the question that was asked, I think, quite well. The committee was asked to provide guidance on how an entity determines whether to recognize a deferred tax asset when A, there's a deductible temporary difference relating to an unrealized loss on available for sale securities. B, the entity has the ability and intention to hold until the loss reverses. And C, there is not enough taxable temporary differences or other taxable profits. That's all we were given the fact that there's insufficient income, there's insufficient deferred tax liabilities. We were given that. We really don't need to tell people necessarily how to make that determination. That was given in the question. So the only thing that we are really asked is, can we separate our consideration of the deferred tax asset on the available for sale security from our general consideration of deferred tax assets? And the answer is no.
Let's keep going and down the line. Guido and then Andrew.
I agree with Scott that maybe that was the initial question that was asked. But looking at all the issues that were brought up by the constituents, I think we cannot ignore all these other issues and just stick to, we don't want it to make it too hard for us, so we don't really want to touch on all the other issues that were raised by the constituents. And again, when I look at BC1C, it raises the question, again, with what I've said, and I have a different view on that as Laurence, is if you have sufficient taxable temporary differences, DTLs, even if you are in a situation where you have taxable losses, would you recognize a deferred tax asset? And when I look at paragraph 24, the black lettering, it says you need to have taxable profits. Taxable profits means if I don't have that, if I don't have profits, if I have losses, you cannot recognize a deferred tax asset. And another paragraph that I would like to point out is paragraph 36 in IS 12 that says whether you have taxable temporary differences is only one of the criteria in order to assess whether you have taxable profits. So I don't think the standard is clear about that. I can understand that, yes, let's restrict to the question that was asked, but that's not really solving the issue. It makes life easier for us. I agree with Scott on that. But
Andrew?
Well, just to come back to Scott's articulation of the question and the answer where he said no, my recollection of our original discussion and indeed what this paper says is the answer would be yes if those AFS securities were in a separate tax pool from all other taxable.
Well,
if they're in a separate capital tax pool, so.
Well, if they are in a separate category of tax pool, then considering everything means considering only that.
Right, okay.
Because there is only one thing to consider.
I just wanted to clarify.
Okay. I hear a couple of messages. One is that nobody wants to quit, and I'm glad. I would have been greatly concerned if you'd all agreed with quitting, because I didn't think you would. There's real concern about the scope, and some of the things that have been mentioned are some of the most problematic parts of 12. That paragraph on expected manner of recovery has just bedeviled us for years, and I am absolutely terrified of getting into it. What I think is that we need to get the board's advice on this one. I think the paper is sufficient for us to ask that advice, supplemented by some of the comments that have been made around the table here about possible additions to the scope and differing views over, I think I've heard at least two different views about what the real problem is, different than what the question was asked. We're going to have to take all that to the board. We ought to aim for the December board meeting. Although that's a short board meeting, so we may not be able to actually get on the agenda. So it may be the January board meeting before we have a chance to talk about this, which means that we may not be able to get back to you at the next meeting of this committee. So that's just being realistic about the calendar. Is that an acceptable approach to everyone? I don't think we should do all of this work and then have the board tell us we were crazy, so we ought to ask them first. Okay.
Thank you.